Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Time to talk with Tom Skilling, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. And Tom, I feel like we've been through so much together these last few months. You think about just last week, you're talking about frost advisories. Now, I don't know, possible? Is it possible we'd get close to 90?
Yeah. It not only is possible, there's a pretty darn good chance of it before the week is out. And I'll tell you what, Anna, we may interrupt the warm spell once it gets going, and it'll be taking hold with increasing firmness the next couple of days. But we may interrupt it Sunday and bring back another surge of warmth on Monday and perhaps even Tuesday. So between all those days, it looks like this week is going to end up averaging about 21 degrees warmer than last week. That's a big change. And it may also include a number of 90-degree days. And, you know, it's interesting, Anna, this is the time of the year when these start happening. The average first date for a 90 is on or about June the 8th. But we had our first 90 on May 24th last year. Of course, we're moving in on that now. We're up to the 18th, so we're getting into that time frame. And back in 1977, we had 9 90s in a row in May. So this has been known to happen. The new normals are out, Anna, and it turns out we wind up with about 17 90-degree days at O'Hare and about 21 90-degree days per year at Midway. Last year, we had 30 90s, so it was actually quite a warm summer last year.
Is there any sense that because you get a 90 this soon that we'll have more warm weather on the way? Do the patterns work like that?
Oh, there is some truth to that, no question about it. Very often, it's interesting, we've gone back, and when we have an early arriving temperature of one sort or another, I use that as the focal point for research on what happened in those years beyond that. And, when you start early, you have more and more time to develop 90s. What's really interesting, Anna, and the other indicators that we may have a hot summer coming, are the fact that notwithstanding a couple of sizable rains through our southern suburbs, our northern suburbs are in desperate moisture shape right now. Now, we may get some scattered thunderstorms in the next couple of days, but they aren't the kind of widespread drop-busting rains in this kind of pattern that you want to see. So there's still time to catch up on this, but we're way behind. We are 13 inches drier at this point this year than we were at this point last year. We're also drier than we were going into the record drought and heat year of 1988. That summer saw 47 90s, the most we've ever had, and it had 7 days above 100. And one of the interesting parallels is we went into that year very dry over a good part of the area. And again, the southern suburbs notwithstanding, there have been a couple of rains there, but they'll dry out pretty fast. Because if you look at the year-to-date, even those areas are not swimming in moisture. And it's not apparent yet because, the vegetation's coming up right now and it looks fresh and green and all the rest. But when that sun gets going on this, the vegetation and so forth, our lawns, if we don't start getting some rain, you'll see that, we're turning brown. And we laid the groundwork for a hot summer because hot summers often happen over dry soils.
How are the farmers doing right now in terms, you said south of us are getting more rain than north, but what are we looking at there in terms of conditions?
Well, there's I think concern. I've been hearing from farmers in our northern suburbs up in McHenry County, for instance, and essentially from Chicago north into Wisconsin, it's very dry. In fact, we're in a moderate state of drought right now, according to the drought monitor, which is the official measure of drought in this country. So, and the farmers are telling me that they're concerned about this. They know full well, better than most of us, that if you don't get these, what we call synoptic scale, or in other words, large scale and general soaking rains in spring, you have trouble catching up with the moisture once you get into the more scattered rains of summer, which can hit one area hard and miss another one altogether, and it's hard to erase moisture deficits with that. So it's, we're not at the point yet where this is critical and eminently worrisome, but we see the indicators of potential trouble down the road if we don't start getting some pretty regular and widespread rains, particularly in the northern half of the Chicago area.
Back to that 90 degrees. Tom, is that too warm for you? I mean, are you a guy that kind of likes it more moderate temperatures? I don't mind the 90. I like snow, too, but I just wonder, how about you? What is that a little too hot for you?
Yeah, you know, Anna, it's interesting you bring that up. We had this debate in the weather office. I work with Bill Schneider, my producer. He loves hot weather. I kind of like things a little more temperate. I love throwing the windows open at night, you know, and letting the warm air come in. And I'm looking forward to doing that in the days ahead because it's going to get that warm that we can do that. And after the cool weather we've been through, that's nice. But, you know, as a general proposition, I worked 1 year in Jacksonville, Florida. And I swore that was that was it. I mean, you know, the whole Sunbelt phenomenon happened because of air conditioning. You know, we hear folks saying, oh, you know, we go down to the South. I dare some of them to turn their air conditioners off and still tell us how wonderful the climate is during the hot season, you know. You hear that from people in Arizona. They say, oh, but it's a dry heat. Yeah, it's dry, and that does temper the, you know, the feeling of that heat. But when you start getting up at 105 and 110 degrees, and you do that day after day after day, and at night don't get below 90, I'm sorry. That's out of my realm, my comfort zone, but that's just me. You know?
No, mine too. I don't mind it warm. I don't mind it even hot. But I spent a couple of years of my broadcasting career in Houston, Texas. And as you know, Tom,
brother.
Sweaty, hot. I mean, super swelteringly hot. In your car, you couldn't turn the air conditioner off for a second while you're driving. It just like beamed through. And they could always tell that I was the one from the north, the Chicago girl.
Yeah.
Because I was the only one who didn't have the tinted windows on my vehicle. They're like, oh, there she is, the one who just moved here from Chicago. She doesn't know yet that you need the tinted windows in Chicago. And then, sure enough, Tom, I got the tinted windows, got an opportunity to come back home to Chicago, and then I got a ticket for the first 3 weeks I was here because my windows were too tinted, too
dark. Windows were tinted.
So there you go.
You can't win for losing.
I can't.
I'll tell you something. You know, it's really amazing. When I worked in Jacksonville, we had to shoot our own weather film. And we had this camera up on the top, a Bolex camera, where we would fire off a frame every 15 seconds. And then at the end of the day, you'd develop the film, you'd play it back, and you had a time lapse of all these beautiful cumulonimbus clouds developing in the Florida skies down there. It was really nice. But I remember you'd go out and you'd shoot the film, and you'd come back in soaking wet. I mean, you were just drenched. And then you go into the air-conditioned building, and you were freezing because all this moisture was evaporating from your clothes, and you hoped like heck that your deodorant had worked, you know, and it would, to, you know, forget it. That's not my cup of tea. I like it for a vacation. But to work in that environment, my gosh.
Hang on there, Tom, because I want to ask you about vacations. And particularly Alaska, because I know you like to travel there. But hang on a second. We got to go to traffic and check that with Mary Vandeveld. And then circle back Tom Skilling. More with Tom in a moment. Back with Tom Skilling. Hey, Tom, we were just talking about vacations and how you're okay getting a little hot. I just noticed, I know you like to travel to Alaska. I just noticed this month they changed the state rules there for travel. And if you're fully vaccinated, you don't have to quarantine. You don't have to test negative. They'll let you right in, and you're good to go. I know you go there a lot. Any plans to do so?
You know what, Anna? I'll tell you what's on the agenda here. I'm going to go try and get out to Hawaii in late June. I know that's a strange time to go, but you know, that Kilauea is erupting again. I was up there, that volcano on the Big Island, and it's not spewing lava over the island or anything like that. In fact, even when it was active a couple of years ago and we were seeing all those pictures, it only affected a tiny little portion of that island, and the area affected was 100 miles from the resorts. There were many people lived around it that were directly affected, but I want to go back and see that again. Because when I went, Anna, it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I went over about 3:30 in the morning. You could catch a boat out of Hilo. And they had 35 of us in there in that boat. And we went out in 12-foot seas. And you travel an hour from Hilo to where the lava was going into the water from the Kilauea volcano. Anna, it was amazing. You had this big pyrocumulonimbus cloud. That's a thunderhead that forms over all the heat from the lava. And to watch this molten lava going into the relatively cool ocean waters was was stunning. And there's strong enough trade winds. You know, they blew that acidic steam away from us, so you didn't worry about that coming in. But it was amazing, and it started erupting again. It stopped all of a sudden about a year and a half ago. It's doing it again, only the lava this time, instead of flowing to the ocean, is inside the caldera, inside the dome of the volcano. But I want to try and see that again. And but Alaska, oh, Anna, it's so beautiful. Have you ever been up there?
I haven't. I was going to take one of those cruises that take you up there, and work-wise, I couldn't get the time off at the moment my friends were going. So it is on the list for sure. It is. I haven't been to Hawaii, Alaska or Hawaii, so those two things are definitely on the list.
I had not been to Hawaii until, 10 years ago. That's the first time I went out there. But, go to Alaska. It's something. You know, it's interesting. This time of the year, the days get very long. And we're approaching the longest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere, June 21st, the first day of summer, and astronomical summer. And the sun only goes down in southern Alaska for about 4 hours a night. And it never gets totally dark. If you go north in Alaska, like up to Fairbanks or even farther north, the sun is up 24 hours a day. And wow. So it's really interesting to see that, you know, and you wonder how your body clock's going to work, how you're going to sleep in an environment. But you do. Yeah, you sleep fine. And
what do you do?
It is weird.
Tom, what do you do? Do you have one of those like beauty sleep, like little things that you put over your eyes or something? I mean, how do you block out all the sun? I would have a problem.
You know
what?
I went up with a guide, and we flew from Fairbanks up into the Brooks Range, which is the northernmost Alaska mountain range. And we spent a week just hop, skipping, and jumping in this little two-seater plane of his. He and his wife in the off-season would set up these little cabins with caches of fuel and all. So we were able to do that. And I wondered how the two of us would figure out where we were going to sleep. I didn't need anything on my eyes. And it was funny. I don't remember us talking about it. Each of these little cabins would have bunk beds in them, and we'd just kind of turn in and whoosh, you went off to sleep. Even though the sun was up brightly, like in the middle of the day, it was very strange. But I don't recall losing any sleep over it. And I didn't need any assist in sleep.
No, I think I would. I don't know why. Too much brightness, and it's hard for me to sleep.
Yeah.
Hey, you mentioned the volcanic activity going on. I saw Mount St. Helens trending today when I woke up, and I thought, please no, please no.
Oh, gosh.
And then I looked. It's the 41 years ago. It's an anniversary, so they're just talking about what happened there in Washington State. They said it erupted with a force equal to 24 megatons of TNT. And
they're
just looking back at that moment in history. It's, something to think
it's
about.
It's stunning. I'll tell you, you know, in any given year, we have volcanoes going around the country, or around the world. And so that's not unusual. And it's interesting. You know, we talk about greenhouse gases and all this kind of stuff. Some people say, well, volcanoes produce more carbon dioxide than we do. It's not true. We produce 60 times the amount of carbon dioxide that comes from all the volcanoes combined in an average year. Now, there are some years where that's not true, but boy, these things, there was a volcano that went up in the Katmai National Park, west of Anchorage and southwest Alaska. That thing blew, oh my gosh, the whole summer in the lower 48 was cool because of all the ash it put in the air. And, you know, Pinatubo and Tambora and El Chichon, all these were mammoth volcanic eruptions that had weather altering. They throw so much ash high into the atmosphere that it takes about 2 years for that to precipitate out, and it can cool global temperatures temporarily. So you can't underplay the effect these volcanoes can have on our climate.
Absolutely not. Speaking of the weather and the climate, let's talk about just a minute here, Tom. We're going to really warm up here. What, starting tonight, tomorrow? When does it all kick in?
Yeah, the nighttime temps tonight will stay in the 60s. We only went down to 58 at O'Hare, 59 at Midway last night. Tomorrow we'll go into the low 80s, Anna. Today we have a breeze off the lake. That's going to start disappearing, which is one of the ways we're going to warm up. We're going to get a good, strong south-to-southwest flow that's going to come right out of the Gulf of Mexico. The dew points, a measure of moisture, will go up to the mid-60s, which is kind of like Gulf Coast level dew points. So the air will start feeling spring-like and humid. And temps will go to the low 80s tomorrow, the upper 80s Thursday, and then around 90 on Friday and Saturday. Looks like we might interrupt the warmth for a day, bring the wind off the lake, and cool a bit on Sunday, and then go right back into the 90-degree temperatures on Monday and Tuesday next week. And there could be a few scattered thunderstorms during this, but what's going to happen is the air is going to warm aloft as this warm air dome develops over us in coming days. So when that happens, you tend to thin out the number of thunderstorms. So they'll be around, but they'll be in fewer and fewer numbers in the days to come.
Awesome. Well, it's going to feel nice to be warm, and we'll see how long it lasts. And it looks like a nice little stretch of it for here. So awesome news, Tom. Yeah. I hope you enjoy it. I hope it doesn't feel too sweaty, because neither of us enjoys that.
You too, and I'll tell you, good luck with those tinted windows and all, you know, and it sounds like you've adapted, so that's good.
I have. I've gotten rid of those forever, I think. But all right, Tom, enjoy the day, and always
Thank
good talking
you, Anna.
With you.
Good to talk to you. You have a great day. Take care, Anna.
You too. Happy Tuesday, Tom. Tom Skilling, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. That's going to do it for us. We got to get to the news at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.